Hi, Dave Emery here. This is side one of For the Record program number 780, OUNB Redux part two. This is being recorded on March 9th of the year 2014. We're going to further develop the political forces, the nature of the political forces that are at work in the, quote, new, unquote, government in the Ukraine. I say, quote, new, unquote, because sadly, as we looked at length and in detail in For the Record 779, these forces in many ways are a recapitulation of the OUNB fascist forces of Stefan Bandera that we looked at great length in For the Record 777, 778, and that we saw as the ideological and political godfathers of not only the Svoboda movement, that you will see that variously spelled as S-W-O-B-O-D-A or S-V-O-B-O-D-A, and the Pravi sector or right sector. You'll see that P-R-A-V-Y-S-E-K-T-O-R, sometimes P-R-A-V-I. By the way, I do not speak Ukrainian, and the spelling of these various names, many of which, perhaps most of which, I am mispronouncing, that will be in the description for the Record program number 780, as they are already in the description for the Record 779. Again, every For the Record show is turned into a long article-length, rigorously annotated and excerpted description so that people can read as well as listen. This programming is a form of hybrid broadcasting. It is both meant to be listened to and to be read. So as I invariably butcher some of these Ukrainian names as the OUN forebearers of the Svoboda and Pravi sector butchered various population groups during their ethnic cleansing of the Ukraine, please bear with me. And for the correct spelling, go to the description. As the coverage of the Sochi Olympics proceeded, I became convinced that an operation was underway, and as the violence and political rhetoric in the Ukraine escalated, resulting in the putsch, it became pretty apparent that there was an op underway. And we're going to revisit the fact that some of the money that was put up to help effect this, quote, democratic, unquote, revolution was put up by none other than Pierre Omidyar, the head of eBay, and Glenn Greenwald's financial angel. We're going to look at other evidentiary tributaries between the WikiLeaks operation, L'Affaire Snowden, and the coup in the Ukraine, as we tie up the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook in one or two more programs, the confluence between the affair in the Ukraine, the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, and also the ongoing Bitcoin circus are going to become even more pronounced and even clearer. One of the things that I found absolutely hilarious, frankly, past a point, and a picture of this will be in the description for the Record program number 780, after President Yanukovych was turned out of power. And again, I want to stress that he was, by all accounts, both corrupt and incompetent, along with an awful lot of other world leaders, particularly in some of the former Soviet republics. Again, if being incompetent and corrupt was considered grounds for a coup, imagine what would have happened after George W. Bush. But in the aftermath of Yanukovych's flight, first apparently to the eastern Ukraine, and then apparently to Russia, wanted posters for Yanukovych appeared. And they said, have you seen this man with a picture of Yanukovych? And that's what they said, although I've seen a few that were in Ukrainian, most of them, and the ones that were featured in the Western media, including the New York Times, were in English, of all things. Now, if you were going to put out a wanted poster in the U.S., whether for actual forensic investigation purposes or for propaganda purposes, would you have it in Ukrainian or English? Most of the ones in the Ukraine were in English, and I think the ideological and covert operation aspects of that, in the most literal sense of the term, speak for themselves. We're going to take a look for our first item at some very important insights from the GermanForeignPolicy.com newsletter. GermanForeignPolicy.com, along with Germany Watch, feed along the lower right-hand side of the front page of the SpitfireList.com website. And GermanForeignPolicy.com, by the way, is in need of sustaining subscribers, and they provide a very valuable asset to their English language readers. And again, their English language service is in need of financial assistance. The GermanForeignPolicy.com of March 6th of 2014 has an article titled "The Kiev Escalation Strategy," unquote. And it notes not only that there appears to be doubt about just exactly who fired the sniper shots in Maidan Square, who, in other words, who really initiated the violence. It also points out that some of the OUNB descended stormtroopers from organizations like Pravi Sektor and Sloboda, as a matter of record, were not only firing weapons, but tossing Molotov cocktails and doing other things that any police or military body in the world would respond to with force. A couple of the major points in the story I'm about to read, again noting the profound role in the new government played by Sloboda. Also a clarification, I noted that a Sloboda member and Dmytro Yarosh, the head of Pravi Sektor, the stormtroopers, were defense secretary and deputy defense secretary. That actually is not altogether accurate. As we're going to see, the Ukraine has something like a National Security Council. And both Andrei Parubiy and Dmytro Yarosh are key members of that council. However, the defense secretary, the defense minister of the current Ukraine government, is indeed not only a member of the fascist Svoboda Party, again, directly and explicitly descended from the OUNB. On New Year's Day, Svoboda organized a march commemorating Stefan Bandera, but the new defense minister of the Ukraine was the former commander of the Ukrainian fleet and is now literally at the point of interface with the Russian forces that are moving into the Crimea, providing, I think, a very ominous face-off and one that certainly could lead to a flashpoint. Also note here a couple of points. The Trident organization, which is linked both to Svoboda and to the Pravi Sektor, was engaging in literal gay bashing during the demonstrations. They were going around beating up gay people. Note that as the Sochi Olympics were going on, the huge hue and cry in the Western media over the relatively repressive gay rights legislation or laws in Russia. Not that I hold a brief for those, but to give you an idea of how hypocritical the wringing of hands in the West was about that in the Western media, just think very quickly, how is the Saudi Arabian gay rights movement coming along? Oh, and while we're at it, what were the results of the latest Saudi Arabian parliamentary elections? Well, of course, those are rhetorical questions. Note that the Trident organization, again, heavily overlapped with both Svoboda and with Pravi Sektor or Right Sektor, the organizations that are directly evolved from the OUNB. They were beating the you-know-what out of gays in the Euromaidan. Note also that among the relatively few groups that are willing to openly acknowledge the fascist nature of what is taking place in the Ukraine are Jews and the Israelis in particular. The Jewish Agency, which is an Israeli agency, has sent not only self-defense instructors to help train the Jewish population of Kiev and elsewhere in the Ukraine on how to defend themselves, but in particular they have sent counselors to counsel them on how to behave if, you know, a torch-bearing anti-Semitic mob shows up at your front door, kind of like the Kristallnacht, because there are ways you want to behave, you know, things you do want to do, things you don't want to do. The point being, however, that the counseling of the remaining Jewish population in the Ukraine at this point is overt and is being conducted because they are fully aware of the Nazi and fascist and openly anti-Semitic character of the forces that are holding sway in the Ukraine. Now, again, the Kiev escalation strategy by GermanForeignPolicy.com reads as follows. The Estonian foreign minister expressed his suspicion that, quote, somebody from the new coalition in Kiev could have been behind the sniper shootings on the Maidan, according to a tapped telephone conversation which has gone online. Sniper fire had preceded Berlin's massively promoted putsch in Kiev. In the telephone conversation, the Estonian Minister of Foreign Affairs, Urmas Peit, P-A-E-T, reported to the Chief of EU Foreign Affairs, Catherine Ashton, that a medical doctor in Kiev assumes that the mortal wounds to both policemen and demonstrators had the same handwriting and could have come from the same assassins. The fact that Kiev's government has yet to initiate an investigation could arouse the suspicion that elements from its own ranks may have been responsible for those assassinations, both of policemen and demonstrators. Videos, in fact, have already documented that snipers had been shooting at both sides. The putschist government, incriminated by Peit's remarks and still enjoying very strong German support, is comprised also of right-wing extremist forces, for example, several Svoboda Party politicians, as well as the commander of the armed militia on the Maidan and the leader of the paramilitary Pravi Sektor, or Right Sector. Both have been given high-level posts as secretary and deputy secretary in the National Security and Defense Council of the Ukraine under the personal leadership of the president. At least British and U.S. media are now openly mentioning the role played by the right-wing extremists in the Kiev putsch. As a Ukrainian journalist wrote in a U.S. online publication, this role should by no means be, quote, underestimated, unquote. When, again quoting, 2 months of protests in the streets did not bring resounding results, again quoting, it was the far right, unquote, that was the first to throw Molotov cocktails and stones at police and to mount real and well-fortified barricades, unquote. The fascists were also among those who burned two military personnel carriers on February 18th. Quote, the Euromaidan won thanks to the resoluteness of people who were ready to fight and take up arms rather than to negotiate in parliament, unquote, the author concludes. Again, noting that it was force of arms and violence rather than the much ballyhooed democracy that carried the day. Continuing, this escalation strategy employed by the extreme right falls in line with a remark in an alleged Vitali Klitschko email, which has been available online for several days. In the email dated January 9th, one can read, quote, I think that we have paved the road for a more radical escalation of the situation. Is it not high time to continue with more resolute actions, unquote? Vitali Klitschko, a former heavyweight boxer, has always been in close contact with Berlin's foreign policy establishment, which, at the time, had not uttered a word of criticism concerning the right-wing extremist activities in the Ukraine. One of the things we noted in For the Record 779, and that will be taken up at greater length here, is the fact that both the Freedom Land of the Fatherland, excuse me, the Fatherland Party of Yulia Tymoshenko and the UDAR Party of Vitaly Klitschko are inextricably networked with Svoboda and with Pravi Sektor. Again, the openly fascist groups evolved from the OUNB. Now, again, more about the government's participation of the Svoboda and Pravi Sektor members. Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk's deputy Oleksandr Sych, S-Y-C-H, and several other ministers of the Putschist government are members of the Svoboda Party, which even before the beginning of the recent mass protests had already won one-third of the votes in sectors of the western Ukraine. The leader of the party had personally cooperated with the German foreign minister during the uprisings. Sych recently became known when he suggested that all abortions be banned, even those for pregnancies resulting from rape. He recommended that women, quote, lead the kind of lifestyle to avoid the risk of rape, including one from drinking alcohol and being in controversial company, unquote. Svoboda members Andriy Mokhnik became Minister for Ecology, Ihor Shvaika, Minister for Agriculture, and this is the most important, Ihor Tenyuk, T-E-N-I-U-K-H, Minister for Defense. Tenyuk had previously commanded Ukraine's fleet from 2006 to 2010 and is now in charge of handling the Crimean conflict. This is significant because Svoboda is by far the most anti-Russian force represented in the Putschist government. Svoboda's Ole Makhnitsky became parliamentary inspector for the Attorney General's office. On the other hand, this should draw attention because Svoboda honors Nazi collaborator Stefan Bandera and his organization of Ukrainian nationalists responsible for having committed massacres, particularly of Jewish Ukrainians and Poles. Svoboda, according to activists in Kiev, still disposes of an illegal armed wing known as C-14 or Combat 14. This had been confirmed a few days ago by the BBC, which reports C-14's size allegedly at 200 members. C-14 took over the headquarters of the Communist Party, an act that turns the spotlight on the concept of rule of law applied now in the pro-Western Ukraine. The name C-14 is probably a semantic flirt with the name C-18 or Combat 18, one of the international networks of neo-Nazi terrorist organizations, skipping down. At the same time, the name points to the number 14. In fascist circles, this refers to the, quote, 14-word slogans of commitment to the, quote, white race, unquote. As the leader of Svoboda's ally C-14 explained, his organization is in a struggle, quote, with ethnic groups that are wielding, among other things, economic and political power. The ethnic groups, unquote, that he is referring to are again, quoting, Russians and Jews, unquote. The fascist structural influence can also be seen primarily in Ukraine's National Security and Defense Council. The president of the Ukraine presides over the council. Members of the council include the prime minister, ministers of foreign affairs and defense, both of Svoboda, the director of the SBU, intelligence service, and high-ranking military officials. The chair of the council designates a secretary. Since a few days ago, Andriy Parubiy, P-A-R-U-B-I-Y, has filled this position. Parubiy, together with Oleg Tyanobuk, has founded the neo-Nazi Social National Party of the Ukraine in 1991, which they then renamed Svoboda in 2004, and which is still under Tyanobuk's leadership. In 2004, Parubiy had been one of the leading personalities of the Orange Revolution. However, over the succeeding years, he had gravitated more toward the former ruling Our Ukraine Party. At the time, pro-Western Viktor Yushchenko was president of the country. Parubiy was then elected to the parliament in 2012 on the electoral list of Yulia Tymoshenko's Fatherland Party, unquote. He became internationally famous when, as the commander of the Maidan, he was the head of the armed militias in the Kiev. The militias were not 100%, but a large percentage, unquote, comprised of fascists, according to activists who were there. The party sector, or right sector, is a sort of alliance of violence-prone right-wing extremist organizations and has wide representation within its ranks. Now, note again the gay bashing by the Trident organization, or Trizhub, and this received no press in the West. According to estimates, the Pravi sector, which again, as we noted in 779, is also directly evolved and explicitly evolved from the OUND, beginning again. According to estimates, the Pravi sector, which received strong reinforcement through the Maidan protests, today numbers nationally up to 5,000 militants. In Kiev, it patrols a city in armed squads of up to a dozen members. Their weapons are usually baseball bats, but sometimes also pistols. Even the German media, which openly shows sympathy toward these protests, characterizes this organization as paramilitary, unquote, and obviously in possession of numerous firearms and ammunition. Its leader, Dmytro Yarosh, joined the right-wing extremist Trizhub, or Trident organization, in 1994, and which he has been commanding since 2005. During the Maidan protests, the Trizhub, or Trident, mainly became known for its attacks on homosexuals and as participants in the Pravi sector. And again, no mention of that in the Western press. And note that Dmytro Yarosh is now one of the top officials in the new government having to do with defense. Again, a few days ago, Yarosh, the head of Pravi sector, was named assistant to Secretary of the National Security and Defense Council of the Ukraine, Andrei Paluboy of the Svoboda Party. Under these circumstances, Jewish organizations are becoming increasingly worried about the safety of the 200,000 Jews left in the Ukraine. These organizations, regardless of their political differences with one another, are, quote, wondering whether their lives, whether Jewish life, has a secure future in the Ukraine, unquote, according to a report. After all, organizations of right-wing extremist thugs, quote, are at the moment in control of the streets of Kiev, unquote. At the beginning of the week, a group of Israeli self-defense specialists landed in the Ukrainian capital on the initiative of the chair of Kiev's Jewish community to begin training members of that community. This is not only about methods of combat, but also about how to behave in crisis situations, it was reported. The Jewish Agency, the Israeli government's official immigration organization, is already preparing emergency measures. Through its undifferentiated backing for even fascists within the Ukrainian opposition, the German government has helped to create the situation making these measures necessary. Demands to isolate Svoboda and other right-wing extremists have been systematically ignored in Berlin and by Berlin's proxies at the Maidan. And again, I would note briefly and in passing that what was at stake here was the Yanukovych government's rejection of an EU association agreement. More about that in the remainder of this side and side two. But again, the U.S., which is caught up in this crisis, has no dog in this fight. And we're going to be taking a look at some of the media and political forces that have been accusing Obama of weakness, etc., and that are helping to drive the situation. Now, of the fate that awaits an EU-associated Ukraine, and what has been happening in the EU has been just surreal over the last several years. Due to my illness, I was off the air for quite some time. I'm fine now, by the way, but I was not in the position to report directly about that. I will be catching up in weeks to come. For the remainder of this side and inside, too, we're going to be taking a look at what is in store for the Kiev, for the Ukraine, I should say, and what the Yanukovych government was rejecting. And it will be interesting to see how readily people in the Ukraine go for this. And one wonders if perhaps the fascist brown shirts that are so strongly represented in the current government of the Ukraine will be used as enforcers against the population should they attempt to reject the austerity. Article about that in the Kiev Post of March 5th of 2014, an article by Ivan Virchuk. EU's long-awaited $15 billion package may add to government's austerity program. The European Union has promised $15 billion of financial help to the Ukraine as the nation tightens its belt amid a looming cash crunch. European Commission President José Manuel Barroso told reporters in Brussels on March that the money would come via various instruments over several years. And skipping down, the $15 billion of EU money mentioned was just window dressing, and little of this will be dispersed as balance of payments and budget support, said Timothy Ash, head of research for emerging markets at Standard Bank in London. Everything will depend on how this money is used. It could be used for fixing the balance of payments, the central bank's reserves, or the budget gap, said Igor Burakovsky, head of the Institute for Economic Research and Policy Analysis. Barroso also proposed that EU countries should immediately apply lower trade tariffs on Ukrainian imports, as envisaged in a future trade agreement that ex-President Viktor Yanukovych had originally shunned on November 21st. Austerity on the part of government has already begun. It cut a number of social programs and other projects to save $5.1 billion. So again, we're going to revisit this subject, and we're going to take a look at a very strongly worded article of analysis in Forbes magazine of what is going on in the Ukraine. The title of that, by the way, from Forbes of February 27th of 2014, Washington's Man Yatsenyuk Setting Ukraine Up for Ruin, by Kenneth Raposa. And again, the Orwellian nature of this, I almost subtitled this program, All's Well That's Orwell. And again, the U.S. media is in full Cold War mode, full lockdown, and we're being treated with all sorts of rhetoric about Russian brutality, etc. Again, how does this sound? Washington's Man Yatsenyuk Setting Ukraine Up for Ruin. That must have come straight from the Kremlin, right? Wrong. That came from Forbes magazine. However, more about that in side two. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 780, OUNB Redux part two. This has been recorded on March 9th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.